It has been a minute since everyone got the desired result they wanted in football. It was about 2 years ago, if you remember, that Mike Ryan and Stu Gatz were celebrating because they both felt like they had a quarterback. They were screaming and yelling. It was on television, captured for posterity. Stu Gatz yelling about Sam Darnold. Mike Ryan yelling about Baker Mayfield, and everyone has spent all the time since laughing at them. But yesterday, Mike's Browns, Stu Gatz comes in here today, and what did you, how was it that you said good morning to Mike?
I congratulated Mike on the MIW, most impressive win of the weekend. I mean, Mike had it. The Browns annihilated the Titans on the road. I know it was a close game, 41-35 in the end. But that game was really never in doubt until the very end. Maybe Mike had some nervous moments, but the Browns played excellent football.
The Miami Dolphins climbed to 8-4, ugly or not. And I know Cincinnati is terrible and their backup quarterback, and that game was closer than you'd like. And I understand if you are a little bit worried that other quarterbacks look special and Tua just looks sort of fine, that he's not throwing the ball down the field. He's not making mistakes, but I understand if you'd be concerned about that. But a well-coached team is 8-4, and watching a Monday night game tonight that matters with Buffalo because it's for first place. And that's unbelievable. It took a pandemic to make all of these things happen because on the same day, Stu Gatz's Jets lose in the most spectacularly funny way possible.
It's a loss that felt like a win. It might be the greatest win in the history of the organization. They've won a Super Bowl.
Well, what do you guys think about this? Because I honestly wonder, and it's hard to honestly wonder anything with Stu Gatz because he's dishonest. I really don't know at the end of the game what Stu Gatz actually wants. I know he's going to come in here and pretend like he wanted the embarrassment that befell him and his franchise. But what do you think, Mike? Like, what do you believe? Do you believe that Stu Gatz is watching the end of that game, rooting actively for that pass to succeed 50 yards downfield to go ahead and do your lethal weapon impersonation?
No, Ruggs. I believe him. When the Browns went 0-16, I wanted to win in the worst way. It was super embarrassing. There were punchline every week. I didn't like being laughed at. But at the pot at the end of the rainbow was a pass rusher. We ended up getting Myles Garrett, who's tremendous, but it's not the franchise turning quarterback. In my lifetime, I think that's only happened two times previously with Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck. 99 overall grade. This guy is can't miss. You have that with Trevor Lawrence this year. So I believe him, but I am embarrassed for him.
Dan, let me explain it to you this way. Yesterday, I had a Lions money line, Jets money line, Arizona Cardinals money line, three-team parlay. And the Cardinals were playing at 4 o'clock.
Right, but you won the first game in a really improbable fashion. Really improbably.
They had already won.
They were losing 30-20, and then Trubisky did Trubisky things, and the Lions, who always lose, did not lose.
And it was like a $50 parlay that paid me north of $1,300. And I am telling you, and I didn't know the result, obviously, of the Cardinal game yet because that's the 4 o'clock game.
I wonder if your answer to this would be different if you had known the result of the Arizona game.
If the Jets win, right, I'm thinking, and I already started to do it. I started putting money on the Rams. No, I already did it. Like, I'm like, there's no way the Jets can lose this game. And I started putting money on the Rams money line because I wanted to hedge my bets and at least come out with like $500-$600 off of that bet because I had, you know, my upside was $1,300. And I am telling you, my wife next to me in the living room, you would have thought we won the Super Bowl. I was hugging her. I was kissing her against my better judgment.
It was Sunday.
Against her will, I imagine.
Oh, that too, yes.
Mike, were the Browns competing with another team for that first pick that year? Like, would winning that final game have lost the first pick for you guys? Or were you, like, was that the reason you were hoping that they won?
No, by the time that Corey Coleman dropped that pass against the Steelers, our destiny was sealed. And I just certainly didn't want to be winless. And it'll be interesting to see what happens with Stu Gatz when he finds himself in that scenario. Number one pick locked up. Now all you have on the line is to not be in the same breath as the Lions and Browns. Right. I think at that point, he'll start rooting for a win.
I'm not going to root for a win, guys.
Even if you have number one, you weren't listening.
We're saying even if you got the first pick sewed up.
Chris, I was looking at him. He was not listening.
I want to be 0-16.
You weren't listening, though.
You're right, I wasn't.
You were not listening.
Yeah. I totally wasn't.
We will get back to that in a second.
I still have the number one pick? I'll take a win.
I want to make fun of Mike Greenberg, who spent last season railing against the indignity and the disgrace of the Dolphins tanking, and all of a sudden yesterday he's rooting for a loss on Twitter after spending a year. Greenberg, when they put you on that many platforms, you got to start paying attention, keeping track of your opinions, dude. You're not Stu Gatz.
You do?
You do not. You do not get to be Stu Gatz because he spent the whole last year complaining about the Dolphins and the idea they were tanking. And yesterday he's rooting. He's calling that the most important touchdown any team has ever needed scored against them.
He's also in denial from this standpoint. He said, those of you who haven't watched the Jets think they're incapable of making that play call and that play. You're wrong. This team is capable. It's like he doesn't want to admit that the Jets are tanking, where I'm trying to tell him they are actively trying to lose games. No one makes that call, defensive call in that spot. It hasn't happened.
Except for Greg Williams, though. Greg Williams, not in that spot, but Greg Williams likes to do that all the time.
Dan Orlovsky, shout out to him, pulling the video out. The Saturday night game in which we had a Moss event and Stu Gatz was reading the scoreboard wrong. Denver had a Hail Mary opportunity a little further down the field against Cleveland, and he blitzed everybody, and it ended up working out that time. This is a Greg Williams thing.
But go ahead, give the stat that Schefter gave, because a lot of people are waving around this stat as the idea of the Jets clearly threw that game at the end.
So Adam Schefter threw this out. Since 2006, there have been 251 pass plays in that situation. Final 15 seconds of regulation between a 4 and 8 point lead, 40 plus yards to the end zone. The last 251 times a team has faced that situation, the opposing team has never called the defense the Jets had called.
I'm sure.
Which is an all-out blitz, leaving a rookie on an island by himself.
No, and to get torched. But the rookie also has to be less of an idiot. Christ almighty. You got to keep it in front of you, though. Wait a minute. I am under no illusions about how fast. You can't bite on a fake there is what I'm saying. You just have to run toward the end zone. You can't fight on. No,
fighting on a fake. I don't even know why you go through the motions of calling a fake.
Mike, honest to God.
He's a rookie.
Mike, that can't work in that spot. You can't. You cannot.
You pumped him.
You stay in front. You just run toward the goal line. And if you have to tackle him in front of you, fine. You just can't let him get behind you.
I want that kid signed to a 5-year extension right now.
He was wide open. Ruggs was wide open.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's just like the argument of like keeping Ruggs in front of you is a lot easier to do in premise, but I
know
I
he's
you.
Fast, but my larger point is play 20 yards off him and don't bite on any fakes.
Well, everybody should have been way back there instead of that guy on an island, especially against one of the fastest players in the league, unless you want Trevor Lawrence. But there's just no way. Stu Gatz always makes his argument about Adam Gase. Adam Gase has zero incentive to do this. He's not going to be the one coaching Trevor Lawrence. He's simply not. So why is he
Stu Gatz thinks that they're giving
this little buyout.
Stu Gatz is of the belief that Gase will be there next year.
I think, listen, I've said this before. Gase, it's weird how this all came together, where you have Mike Maccagnan, the former Jets GM, who hired Adam Gase, the current Jets head coach. Gase got rid of Maccagnan and hired Joe Douglas, he hired him. Joe Douglas does not have the job if not for Adam Gase.
Yeah,
Gase hired Douglas, and I don't believe that Douglas is prepared to hire Gase after 1 year after that guy got him this job.
I think they're both gone. But you're a Jets fan, and you have relationships there, and it's one of the few things that you've ever stayed consistent on. I just can't envision them being so bad to the point that they're historically winless. And that regime coming back, but, I mean, you know your team better.
The only thing I would tell you, Mike, is perhaps there'll be a scenario here where Dabo Swinney decides he wants to coach in the NFL, wants to coach Trevor Lawrence, maybe Justin Fields wants Urban Meyer. I can't control that. Like, if one of these two guys wants a certain coach and the Jets are willing to do that for one of these two guys, then perhaps that will play out.
I want to talk to the shipping container about yesterday's Dolphin game and what level of concern there is on the perception that you're watching into early this season. This is how a quarterback learns on the normal scale that I've always seen my entire life. This is excellent play for a young quarterback who doesn't yet know how to play. But we have seen a total change in the last, 5-10 years where guys can step in and be great immediately in a way that shows you, telegraphs to everybody, this person is special. And Tua, I think it's fair to say, so far has just sort of been fine. It's a lot of rollouts, a lot of intermediate passing. But before we get to that, this is the question I wanted to ask you guys. Yesterday's result notwithstanding, and we'll cover this at some point during the show today, because for all the offensive geniuses that there are in this sport, the guys like Andy Reid, McVay, Shanahan, they can all do things with scheme that no one else can do. No one can do defensively what Belichick does to rookie quarterbacks. He Crazy. Made Herbert look like he did not know what he was doing yesterday.
Yep.
Like it was, he put a clown nose on him.
He
it
did.
Was crazy to see that Herbert would drop back to pass and it'd be like, I've been throwing the ball all over the field. I am Dan Marino this season. I'm first in everything for a rookie quarterback ever, and I don't know what I'm doing. How's that linebacker there, and why is he picking off the ball?
Belichick got head coaching jobs because he was such a great defensive coordinator.
It's crazy, but nobody does that is what I'm saying. Like, you can wonder about their offense all these years. Is it Tom Brady? Is it a manufacturer of scheme? How do they do that with all those number 80s who have weird names over the years that they throw to that are tiny white people? Like, there are any number of things, but nobody does it defensively. You can't point to a second person and say there's anyone capable of doing. And here's the best part to me. Nobody here at ESPN, Pro Football Talk, anywhere is explaining to you how the bleep he does that.
Nope.
Like, no one in the sport knows how the bleep that happens.
Here's what they'll say. Well, he takes one thing away.
Yes.
He takes your strength away. I don't know if that's what he saying, does. Sounds good.
I am saying that nobody gives you the analysis that helps you understand how the bleep that happens again and again, where you're like, I don't understand how one of the most special rookie quarterbacking talents I've ever seen is somebody who looks like he doesn't know what he's doing with one quarterback. Did you guys see what Cam Newton threw for yesterday in a 45-point win?
Was it 150 yards?
It was 69 yards.
Oh, my God. Nice.
So the thing I wanted to get to, though, before the Dolphin talk and the Herbert talk is this, because I have told you a lot that I don't understand how to evaluate quarterback play. So Tannenbaum told you, and we all laughed at him, Herbert's better than Tua and Burrow. I would draft him first. He was my first-round pick. And as everyone tanks for Trevor Lawrence, the question I wanted to ask you is, because I've been overwhelmed watching that Trask kid at Florida.
Very good.
I know, but so nobody's talking about him in the same, or Justin Fields, in the same sphere with Trevor Lawrence. And I'm asking you, is he going to make some sort of leap? I know Florida's got skill talent all over the place.
I can't believe Trask was behind Felipe Franks at that position. And Trask, by the way, was De'Aaron King's backup in high school.
Yeah. Hadn't started a game
in years.
What's
he regarded as a future quarterback?
I don't know. I don't know if he's moving up Mel's big board or where McShay has him, but you're right. Very few people.
He's making professional throws. I'm watching them, and he's making these 100%. Throws into small windows, and he's got a big arm, and he's throwing it down the field. Now, that Pitts kid is amazing. So he just throws it in his direction. It's like throwing to Julio Jones.
And Dan Mullen is one of the greatest offensive minds in college football history. Look what he did with Tebow and Dak Prescott. But you know, Trask is... He was called the Heisman favorite, and I wanted to pick holes in it, but in this year, it's so hard to figure out who's the Heisman favorite. I'm good with that. They've been really good, a tremendous offense, and Pitts is a weapon, but Pitts hasn't been available to them the entire season.
Do you think my father's going to lose his Heisman vote? Am I going to lose my Heisman vote? Because I would put two kids from Florida in my top three. I really would.
I would certainly, I don't know if
not two kids from the University of Florida, two kids from the state of Florida. Like, okay. De'Aaron King to me is Heisman worthy.
Trask, by the way, I'm checking out some mocks right now. He has moved up to a position where certain people are saying he's a top 15 pick. So
Dan said he has been overwhelmed by Trask. I'm just trying to imagine what that looks like. Are you like on your couch, just like struggling to breathe, like having to fan yourself? Like, what's going on here?
It's a gif of Hugh Jackman in the fountain with the white light and wind is just like blowing his face off.
What I mean is, I'm just betting overs on Florida games.
Attaboy.
And I've been doing it since before the season started.
Well, since this is the local hour, I do
entertainment purposes only.
I want to talk about Brian Flores a little bit. I thought that was interesting. Backing up his guy.
Oh, what a beast.
backing up his guy and then saying, hey, we have to have more level heads in that situation. I have found it interesting. I'm staying out of it with the Tua stuff. I've learned with my own quarterback that I just desperately wanted to be good. Miami hasn't had one of those, one that just speaks to your soul. Tannehill didn't do that for you. You wanted Brady Quinn to be that guy, and he couldn't be that guy for you. You want Tua to succeed with every fiber of your being, so you will come out and defend him. I get it. I've been there like 7 times with Cleveland. I don't care that Tua hasn't had the special rookie season that even Baker Mayfield had. I'm not comparison shopping. I do know that your head coach is awesome. Yeah. You want to know, like you said, Belichick does that to rookie quarterbacks. Brian Flores did that to Justin Herbert as well. And the quotes coming out of that Chargers game from the Chargers players were so beyond flattering for Brian Flores. I mean, how can you
I wonder
not?
What they're going to be on Belichick. I haven't read any of them. If they were that for yeah. what Flores did to him.
By the way, just to give people an idea of what you guys are talking about what these guys did to Justin Herbert, the Saints have a great defense. Sean Payton is a great coach. He had 300 yards, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions against the Saints. So that's what Belichick and Flores did to him. Flores is phenomenal.
You see that brick wall behind Roy? I would run through that thing for Brian Flores. I mean, Mike is so right about this.
Roy, is that because we're only on the radio and this is not a visual medium at all? Chris, excellent work as always. I understand why you got fired. Is that actual brick behind you, Roy?
No, it's a stone that's plastered.
Oh, even tougher to run through.
Wall.
How did you guys feel? Billy, how did you feel seeing Flores defend his guy all of a sudden? You guys saw this, right? The Bengals are in an interesting position to be taunting anyone, but Mike Thomas was laughing about the hit that caused all of that on Instagram, and then all of a sudden you've got the – it reminded me, I think, was it not Brian Cox going toward the Bengals bench a million years ago trying to fight his first year in the league, trying to fight the entire Bengals bench during a – there were two things from the past I was reminded of yesterday during that Dolphin game. The catch that Gesicki made with one hand – that is not the best catch in franchise history because Aronde Gadsden had one better than that. That was the same kind of looking catch.
You also have the Nat Moore helicopter catch.
That is, yes. That
it's
is,
up there. I'm sorry.
Well, that is just not the catch. That's what happened after
That's
the catch.
A good shout. It was the Bengals for Brian Cox trying to fight the entire sideline.
Billy, what did you do with all of that as Brian Flores decided he wanted to get into the fight too?
And listen, this is one of those things where everybody wants to get in a fight knowing there's not going to be a real fight. Brian Flores isn't going to be fighting any football players. Let's not be ridiculous. I like the act, though, like pretending like you want to fight. But I like this Brian Flores. I think he's good. Brian Flores seems to have control of what's – well, I guess saying control isn't the best situation because things seemed a bit out of control yesterday. But I feel like he's got his finger on the pulse of this team and this fan base. This Tua yesterday, huh? Huh? Still don't know if he's good or not, but hey.
Well, we still don't know if Kirk Cousins is good or not.
I think it's the right way to describe it. I'm throwing it out there for you to make your own evaluation. I don't possibly. I'm not sure.
I mean, what am I missing from yesterday? He was 26 of 39, 296, a touchdown, no interceptions. They won the game. I mean, he's undefeated.
You want style points. You want. I think Dolphin fans everywhere want to grab onto that feeling that they had maybe that last drive against Arizona, right? You want to see him because we're moving the goalposts a little bit on rookie quarterback evaluation. And it's not just, is he good for me? Is he better than the other guy? And perhaps we should probably change that as a society.
Wait, is he undefeated? Because loss not count where they pulled him for Fitzpatrick? Because maybe that's what Flo was doing. He knew that thing was going to go south, so he took him out so he doesn't get that L.
He gets the L, he's still
undefeated.
I give Fitzy that loss. I mean, if you bring Fitzy in because he thinks he can win you the game and he doesn't, that's a loss.
Did you watch the game? The reason I ask is because you can look at those stats and there are any number of guys in the league who can be competent.
Yeah.
What you're not, and this is, I don't actually need to overcomplicate the evaluation on quarterback play, even though I'm admitting to you on the front end, I have some difficulty doing the measurements on how a quarterback is made good. That bad Bengals team with its backup quarterback, you got to do better than 19 points. Like, you have to score more than 19 points against a broken football team that has quarterback play that is not very good. 19 points is not enough. Settling for field goals, not feeling like you're a threat on any kinds of big plays.
I agree. You'd like to see the Dolphins, first off, baby steps, and let's slow down with this Dolphin team, where suddenly the Dolphins, who have been a laughingstock for two decades, need to beat the Bengals by more than 12 points. They beat the Bengals. They beat them at home. Tua was fine. I did watch the game. And yes, you would like the Dolphins to win that game by more, but they didn't.
You want them to score more.
I know you want them to score more, but I thought Tua played a bit better and the offense did in the second half than they did in the first half. And plus, you had that terrible drop. Jakeem Grant should have scored a touchdown on one pass. So.
The analytics community for the NFL has been going away from goal line fades as of recent, and that seems to be all the Dolphins want to do is throw goal line fades inside the red zone. It doesn't make sense. Like, get more creative with the play calling.
I think they've got a bit of a playmaker problem in that the people that they have at their positions, some of them are above average, but none of them are elite. Like, you're not looking at the Dolphin offense and you're not, you're seeing what that every other team in the league would want anywhere. Give me, look at the Dolphins offensive huddle and give me the guys that everyone in the league says, I want that guy. It's one of the testaments to Flores. They're still in the rebuilding portion of this, Stugatz. This team has been bad for a long time. This team was not supposed to be 8-4 good this season.
I'd say Gesicki, but everyone seems to have a Gesicki.
Yeah, well, I mean, look at what Waller did yesterday. What do you do against that person? Look at what's the guy in that with the Titans? Corey Jones? Like, what the hell do you do with that guy?
Corey Davis?
Davis.
Yeah, he was a top five receiver pick, but Janu Smith, they have a good one. He just didn't play yesterday. But the tight end positions, the Gesicki is a guy that's really impressed me, too, because he was one of these, like, Penn State tight ends that a bit of a project. He's got the frame for it, but is he a polish? And he's getting better and better seemingly with every game.
Tony's right about Tua playing much better in the second half, but there were times in that first half where I was genuinely rooting for him that this thumb injury is more serious than it's been reported, because his throws were so off in the first half where I was rewinding plays like, wait, he did not just miss that wide open receiver by a lot. And I was sitting there almost rooting for him to have a bad thumb injury because I need an explanation for why he was so terrible.
And are you worried at all, Chris, at my assessment? Let's go around the room here and just, Mike, what is the sound that you want to make? Like, where we're, if we were all evaluating Tua as a quarterback so far, if we could not speak English as a language or Spanish or any language that people would understand, and we just had to communicate the way you would with animals, with aliens, where you would try to give people your assessment in a sound of what Tua is. Okay, that's a good one. Billy, do you have a sound for me, just a sound on what Tua is? Okay, I don't think that works exactly.
Work for me.
What did he say?
I think he's communicating with some sort of alien creature, and he really bought into that.
He's excited.
Woof, I don't know.
Okay, so
the Dolphins over here.
Was excitement what you were trying? Yes, it was a bit. You were talking to a dolphin there. What were you trying to convey there when we go back to speaking English?
Just let my sound speak for itself.
Okay, very good. Art. Okay, very good. It's art. I don't know what it means. Chris, what is the sound that you would associate with the assessment of what Tua is?
Ugh.
Wow, that's a bit
sounds like you're taking a dump.
Sensual. That was some vigorous thrusting in a sensual situation. Tony, what sound would you go with? See, I think that's the most accurate one so far. Roy, what do you have for us as a sound other than just an impeccable microphone that will pick up this one sound of yours better than any of the others?
Nice.
I agree with that.
Roy's life philosophy. Mm-hmm. That just, you can ask Roy about anything, and that is what you get: an undercurrent of brooding, a dollop of indifference. God, this is not. I don't feel like this is your wheelhouse. But the sound that you would go with on your assessment of Tua is. Okay, intrigued. He's mildly intrigued.
Intrigued.
All right. So
don't know enough yet, but
So is Kirk Cousins good? Do we know? Are the Raiders for real?
Ugh.
I wanted Billy's dolphin noise there.
Just say it. Just do it now.
This is the way it works with art, Mike. You cannot just summon it whenever you want. Billy said himself, he's not a piano bar. He says it. The work stands.
Really left me out to dry there. Like, Dan's like, make up a sound to express this to aliens. It's like, okay, so we're just going to use human hmms.
Yeah,
and just variations of the same thing.
The aliens.
We're talking
stuff.
To aliens here.
Yeah, I'm trying to get it
simple.
You
don't know what these sounds are. What my sound is makes as much sense as everyone else's sounds to aliens that don't speak English or any other language on Earth.
Technically don't know what aliens know and don't know, Bill. So maybe I'm communicating correctly to them.
I understand what Billy's doing, but Billy, more than anybody, really bought into the construct of having to communicate this aliens. To aliens.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, those are the rules of the game.
It was animals, too,
for a
while.
You don't play Monopoly with the rules of chess, you know what I mean?
Yes, I do know what you mean. What are you talking about? Isn't it checkers chess? Like, explain to me what that thought was that you limped in with there. What does it mean?
He was just pulling a cliche.
I don't think you do Monopoly in chess. I don't think that's the right two games to pull out. It's checkers and chess, you know?
You were doing, like, moving board?
No, he's playing chess while others are playing checkers. He was going to his cliche tree and picking the lowest hanging fruit.
Sense.
I mean, no one had ever said Monopoly in chess, though. That's the only thing I was pointing out.
You've got the you're not understanding what.
Briefly touching on the Miami Hurricanes, because Dan opened up a portal saying that he would consider De'Aaron King is a Heisman candidate, and I want to echo that because De'Aaron King is certainly the best quarterback that the University of Miami has had since Ken Dorsey. I feel like that's a safe assessment, and Miami is simply not 8-1 without De'Aaron King, who, from someone that had the coronavirus, recovered quite nicely on short notice against Duke. This is a Duke team that, you know, has beaten you and come into Hard Rock Stadium and talked loads of shit. Al Blades Jr. Posting screen caps from Duke players' Snapchat from a year ago, remembering that stuff. Miami didn't move in the AP top 25. They're stuck at 9. I'm not sure how much more they needed to do in that road performance, blanking their opponent.
Is there anyone you're looking at that you say they should absolutely be ahead of these people?
No. I think everything about Miami has been fair and just, with the exception of them like falling 3 spots, winning a game on the road as a road dog. That one didn't make any sense to me. The Big Ten media is always going to inflate whatever competitive team is there, and Indiana jumps Miami because they seemingly have an impressive victory because they don't have their backup quarterback, and Wisconsin was ranked, but now Wisconsin's 2-2, and maybe we shouldn't have ranked Wisconsin.
Didn't you say the best case scenario in your mind for going into next season is to just simply have the one loss season, not play in the ACC championship game, be able to howl all offseason about how you deserve to be in the top 4, but not actually want to be in the top 4 because you'll get exposed in the top 4.
Ideal. This is the most Miami shit ever, Dan. Talk loads of shit, be angry, feel like you were tried unjustly, and never actually have to back it up. This is awesome.
And Manny's leaning into it, too. He must have called them a top 10 team like 62 times in the press conference that I heard yesterday. Like, he's just leaning into, hey, you played like a top. You didn't start great against Duke, but you ended up playing like a top 10 team. And it's just like, you're top 10 team. I get it. But,
This is a rebuild, man. And this is perfect for Manny Diaz's rebuild. Are they as good as the number 9 team in the country? I don't know. It's a weird year. But it's going great if you want to sell your program to recruits. You're starting to see some
Tony, what are you laughing about?
He petered out, Dan. We started out with a peter out of Chris in the morning on
all right,
Monday.
Tell me more, because I missed the peter out. Tell me more.
I had a good take on my Canes thing, and I kind of like, he's right. We were laughing at each other in the Zoom. I kind of tailed out.
But he was like, happened? Oh, Manny Diaz is telling him they're a top 10 team. They're a top 10 team. Chris is like, They are a top 10 team. Okay, my bad.
I just kind of dismissed them as a top 10 team.
Actually,
you bailed on everything.
Depending on how the ACC championship goes, it looks like many are saying that Notre Dame is safe no matter what. They can afford to lose that game to Clemson because they've already beaten Clemson, and the committee will probably take a one-loss Notre Dame in that playoff, which leaves the Orange Bowl and a possible matchup, which would be a great story. Kyle Trask against his high school teammate, De'Aaron King. And that'll be cool for bragging rights. And the last time those two teams matched up, it was a tight game. But I think look, both things can be true. The ACC very clearly wanted Notre Dame and Clemson to be the ACC championship game. Why? I'm not exactly sure, because Notre Dame is not a fully fledged member of the ACC. But those two teams are there on merit, and the ACC probably did what they could to ensure that would be the title game.
I'm convinced our country is as sick as it is just because of what Notre Dame did on the field after beating Clemson.
Why would the ACC want Clemson to play Miami in the ACC championship game when they lost 42-17? Like, that doesn't seem like it's going to be very close.
Sexy matchup, maybe trying to draw Notre Dame to the ACC full time. I don't know.
I think that's what it is. And if they're hoping for that, they're going to be left at the altar. The ACC should probably be a little bit more invested. Here's like, the University of Miami did desperately want to play Notre Dame this year. When their non-conference schedule, you had a game against Michigan State go out the window. When the non-conference stuff went out the window, with the exception of UAB, Miami wanted the opportunity to play Notre Dame, and said they travel over to Clemson, and that with Trevor Lawrence at the height of his powers, and that was a loss. They wanted an opportunity to play it on the field. They didn't get it. Either way, Miami, I think, ends up winning in the long run, because this is – if now, Miami's got a tough game against North Carolina and Sam Howell. And that's been a thorn in Miami's side since they joined the ACC. So Miami and Manny Diaz are going to have to run the table from here on out. But they're going to have as good an argument as anybody, saying we're a different team now. We've grown. We want our opportunity to play. We've played more games than so-and-so. So it's shaping out good for Miami. And hopefully they don't have to drop a result here and they can talk their shit at the end of the year.
So that's a better scenario for you from a recruiting standpoint going into
you don't
next
even
year
want to play in the ACC championship.
I mean,
game,
I would
correct?
Like to. I mean, well, always. I would like the opportunity to play Notre Dame. That's been taken away, but I don't think we're of that class.
But you're fearful we'll get you'll get blown out if you play Clemson. Is that the fear?
Yeah. Okay. That's my fear. I think Clemson is. I think they proved that already once in Death Valley how much better they are. They didn't seem particularly close, but I want to. Miami is earning the right to show the world how much they've grown throughout each game. Whether that's true or not, we'll see on the field.
To play in the ACC championship game against Notre Dame, though, Clemson would have to be out.
Right. No, I'm saying,
why would they be out
no,
over my, Miami?
No. I wanted the opportunity to play Notre Dame during the regular season. I think Wake Forest could have very well, if there was a prop bet, Wake Forest will either upset Notre Dame or Miami, I would have taken it. That is a problematic offense, and the fact that we never got to see that Notre Dame-Wake Forest game that was just taken off, it was moved twice. Remember that. It was an early season
matchup.
Well,
how about that Notre Dame game beating Louisville 12-7? Like, what the hell happened in that game?
Yeah.
I think Ian Book was out that game.
The last time Miami played Notre Dame, and I think Ian Book might have even been a member of the roster there, it was 41-8. I would like to see our athletes match up with that playing style of Notre Dame. I think Notre Dame is better than Miami right now, and Miami can wave their arms in the air saying, hey, we appealed to the ACC that we wanted this matchup. They didn't get it. It's fine. It's been a very good year for Miami. Now you hope against hope that De'Aaron King decides to come back another year. Everything that I'm hearing, that's probably not going to happen.
How could he possibly come back next
well,
year?
Well,
what?
Maybe Manny Diaz can promise him he can grow a couple inches. I don't really know what his pro prospects are. He's pretty short at the position. He's not as great as some of the other short quarterbacks that have come in there. Everything
he's not
going to
get taller.
Yeah, everything that I'm hearing is that he's probably headed to the NFL.
Ian Book did play in that game. My apologies. I don't know what happened there.
To get back to the Kyle Trask thing, after 9 games, Kyle Trask stacks up against Joe Burrow's Heisman campaign. He's got more passing yards, more passing touchdowns, and fewer interceptions than Joe Burrow.
Overwhelmed. I watched them just stuck to the back of my couch like a giant propeller is blowing in my face.
It's weird.
I'm telling you, in terms of college football, watching overs with Florida, the over-under in their last game, they did not make it, was 40.5. The expectation is that Trask is going to throw the ball all over the field, that Pitts is going to catch it everywhere. I have not seen. Have you guys seen an offense that's more fun to watch and more pro-style in college football this year?
Alabama's pretty good, I could tell you that. Matt Jones has been ridiculous. I don't know how you keep Florida out of the Final Four. I really don't. When you consider the only loss is at Texas A&M, it's the only game this year which had a packed house at College Station. They only lost by 3 points. They beat Georgia when Georgia was a top-5 team. I'm not certain how the committee's going to keep Florida out of the Final Four.
Well, because they would probably have to keep Texas A&M out of the Final Four, and they have the same record right now, do they not? And head-to-head, Texas A&M beat Florida. So if you're using that as your argument, it should actually go towards Texas A&M.
Billy, if you had just one sound to explain to the aliens how good Florida's offense was, what do you imagine that you would go with? Oh, wow.
It was different at the end.
Yes, yeah. It was.
That's an exclamation point.
It was different at the end. Oh, wow. A little stray. What was that at the end? There was a little stray something extra at the end. Do you still hate Florida, Mike? Because that rivalry sort of predates a whole lot of folks listening to this.
Oh, yeah. No,
Miami, Florida was a million years ago.
I've traveled to this game a couple of times. I hate their fans. I hate their fans. They're just awful to me every time I see them, and the feeling is mutual.
Mike, A&M lost to Alabama 52-24. You think the Gators lose that way to Alabama? I think the Gators could beat Alabama.
Well, we'll see.
I mean, they played and Texas A&M won.
Yeah.
No. Alabama.
No, I'm saying Florida and Texas A&M played and Texas A&M won.
I know. I mean, 3-point game at home at College Station. Every seat in the house was sold. I mean,
yeah, you
no
keep
one was
mentioning
wearing a mask.
That. Can you explain to me? Explain to me. I'd love to know.
It was weird.
It's a part of his evaluation.
Why is it that
he goes to that as much as I go?
Because that's the game
property.
Dan Mullen came out afterwards and said, I want 90,000 at the Swamp for our next home game, and then tested positive for COVID.
I feel like you have not given us any college football analysis other than I know that was the only packed house that was played in front of this season.
I'm not certain Texas A&M is any good is what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to tell you they got blown out by Alabama and they're the only team that benefited
from
a sellout.
I'm trying to say that you're not qualified to say who's any good because your only analysis this season on college football most repeated is Texas A&M had a full house the day they played Florida. Hmm. You have said it like a...
Can you explain to me why you think Florida deserves to be in the Final Four?
Let me explain.
And Texas A&M is not any good, but Texas A&M beat the team that you say should be in the Final Four.
Texas A&M lost to Alabama. It wasn't close.
Everyone's lost to Alabama.
52-24. I do not believe the Gators will lose. In fact, I think the Gators could beat Alabama, but if they lose, it will not be 52-24. And I am saying that the Gators had to play the only road game against a ranked opponent in front of a packed house this year. That's a disadvantage. That's unfortunate for the Gators. They got unlucky. Okay. I mean, who allowed that many people in College Station?
I regret asking. I'm abundantly clear on your thoughts.
He's like there's a glitch in the machine where the hard wiring, and now he's going to eat a celebratory muffin in the middle of the segment because he was so good during the course of that hour with his college football
analysis.
Like
a child, he's just eating the chocolate parts of the muffin right now
so
first.
Good. Name the good – I mean, honestly, that's out of Florida. Name the good win on the schedule.
Yeah.
On Texas A&M's schedule?
Yeah,
they beat Florida.
Yeah, besides them.
I mean,
it doesn't count that game. I'm saying throw it out. I mean, they had a packed house.
Stugatz,
unfair. No one else has had a packed house this year.
Who has Florida beaten, Stugatz?
Florida?
Go ahead. Off the top of your head. I'll wait. Don't look it up. Tell me.
I mean, I have to
you
look
went
it up.
To Florida.
I
mean, you pooped.
I didn't go to Florida.
Your wife went to Florida.
What does that mean?
You pooped in a sorority house. They're your college football team.
Wait, so I pooped in my wife's sorority house makes them my
yes,
team?
Yes. You just pooped in the center of our house with your college football coverage. Yeah. You pooped in the center of her sorority house, and you have been talking about the Gators. If you had to guess, guys, who is Stugatz's college football team? If you had to guess the one that he has the most interest in over the years, it's the Gators, Stugatz, because
Gators,
of your
sure.
wife.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Will you stop eating chocolate from the muffin and do the professional part of your show?
They beat Georgia, the Bulldogs, top five at the time.
Yeah.
How about that?
Cocktail party.
What you got?
Neutral site, though, Stugatz.
Yep. Exactly. They didn't even play him at home. I mean, it's a good football team. You say Trask is the best quarterback you ever seen.
Again,
I mean, I'm agreeing with you.
Texas A&M beat him.
Yep.
Packed house. Yeah, I beat you to it, mother
man.